Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Whitey Gleese and Nick Friedel, so pleased that you're with us on 95.7 The Game. Make sure you check out Nick. He'll be on tomorrow with Steiny and Dibley on, don't tell anybody, my favorite show on the station, Steiny, Guru, and Dibs. And then tomorrow, big game for the Warriors, right, Nick? The Warriors, Martin Luther King Day, taking on the hated Lakers.
Whitey, this is always big when Steph and LeBron see the floor, given the injury issues that Steph dealt with last year and the shared history with all the finals. But what I'm curious about, on that kind of stage, even though there aren't going to be fans and it's not going to feel the same, I really want to see what James Wiseman looks like going up against Anthony Davis. Because this is a kid at 19 who he's confident. He believes in his talents, and there's a lot of talent to go around. But when you start to see him have trouble against the Serge Ibakas and Miles Turners of the world, when you see Anthony Davis at home against a Lakers team that would love nothing more, as usual, to knock out the Warriors, that is what I'm going to be focused on the most tomorrow night.
What impresses you the most about Wiseman so far? I know I didn't know he could shoot like that. I didn't know he had that kind of handle. We'd heard reports and we'd seen glimpses. Obviously, there are a lot of issues. He's very young. But every so often, he makes a play, Nick, that makes me think, oh, my goodness, they may have a real – his athleticism is just it's almost awe-inspiring, I would say.
The athleticism is awesome. But, Whitey, I think what gets me when you're watching him, and I've gone to those first few games of Chase on that homestand, you're seeing somebody who is so long. He is so long and athletic. And you're just not used to seeing that kind of length to go with that kind of talent, a guy who can hit the jumper, who can knock it down from the outside, who can feel good about where he is. And I think he's still learning where he needs to be on the floor. But he has so much athletic ability, and his length, it's just going to drive teams crazy when they try to drive to the rim and he's there to block their shots or at least change them up. The thing that stands out to me on top of the length, though, is just how much he still has to go and develop physically. I mean, this is a kid who has to live in the weight room. And the Warriors have praised him repeatedly for his ability to learn and to be available to take the coaching and to take those extra words of either praise or criticism from Draymond. But Whitey, he is going to have to put in that work over and over and over to show that he is what everybody thinks he can be, which is one of the next stars of that next wave of younger players that's coming down the line.
I know that quite often you will hear the philosophy that, hey, you can't really draft for need. You have to draft the best player. But in this case, we know that the Warriors, they had a need at center, and he certainly appears so far anyway to have a great chance to fill it. What do you say, Nick? We talked about this earlier. I realize to fans who are wondering why, hey, how come he's not playing more minutes? There are too many times at crunch time when he's not on the floor. I don't think fans recognize how much he's still struggling with certain aspects, especially defensively.
There's no question. And Whitey, he's really struggling with positioning. I'd say he really doesn't know where to be. He doesn't know exactly what needs to happen on certain sets, and he's not comfortable out there in the way guys are defending him and the way he is struggling to kind of find his rhythm. I think that's the thing as you watch Wiseman, is that all the things that he's going through, you're used to seeing from younger players. It's just that they don't all come with the expectations that the number two pick usually comes with. But to me, if you're wondering why Wiseman's not out there late, it's because Steve Kerr hasn't developed that kind of trust level with him yet. And even when in the games like the other night when they were without Pascal, Kerr couldn't go to him because Wiseman was in foul trouble. And if you're looking for why Wiseman is struggling a little bit in these last couple of weeks, it's because he keeps picking up these cheap fouls, and they're early, and they change how he wants to go about his game. So all of that will come. It's part of the growing process, and I don't have any doubts that in another month or two, he will be out there to close some games. But right now, with the Warriors up and down the way that they are and in desperate need of getting these wins when they can, Wiseman has to be the guy who's kind of on the outside looking in, and I hope for his sake, and I know the Warriors are hoping for his sake, that it will only motivate him to accelerate that learning curve.
I think 6-6 is certainly something they can feel reasonably good about. Obviously, there are issues which we'll get into. I think with the Warriors, almost more important than the wins, and wins are very important, almost as important as the wins, is getting better. You know, if they're getting better, that's the thing. Are we playing better basketball than we were? I think there's definitely been some growth from those first two games. But you asked about, you know, Wiseman against the Lakers. What's your best guess? What do you think is reasonable to expect from him against Anthony Davis and the Lakers? What do you think the Warriors are expecting from Wiseman tomorrow?
I don't think they're expecting that much. I think they know that school is in session and Professor Davis is going to walk Mr. Wiseman through some real interesting lessons over the course of that game. When you're the Warriors and you're looking on paper against the big men that he's gone against so far, it's pretty clear that he's struggling against vets. He's struggling with guys who have been in the league for a while, who know where to be and what to do. And if you're the Warriors and you see the scouting report that AD is playing the way that he is and he just won a title and he has the confidence that comes with that, that's where the shift starts to happen when you start to go, all right, what else can we do in a game like this to get our 19-year-old rookie some confidence early? I do think they're going to try to get him the ball. We've seen this the last few games. Whitey, he gets going. He gets a couple jumpers, and they're trying to get him involved. It's just that it hasn't been able to stay that way throughout the course of the entirety of a 48-minute game. Maybe over time that will start happening more. But as far as tomorrow night, I would be very surprised if Wiseman's able to have a big offensive impact, just because Anthony Davis is one of the very best defenders in the game, and you know there is no love lost between the Lakers and the Warriors, and they remember all the times that they've been struggling against them for all these years, and now they're the ones that are on top with LeBron as the star of the show.
And Nick, as you describe what a learning process it's been for him, I'm reminded of a couple of plays where he's trailing Dame Lillard, and Dame Lillard just stops in a lane and Wiseman runs into him, where he's guarding Jokic, and you could almost see him, Wiseman, turning to the official and saying, hey, he can't do that, can he? Because Jokic, knowing all the tricks. One of the issues, and I don't think this is a surprise, the Warriors knew what kind of player he was, but if the ball goes in to Wiseman, there's a good chance it's not coming out. I mean, you know, the Warriors in the past have had guys like Bogut and Draymond at times playing center. You could run your offense through him. He's just not that type of player. Is that fair to say? I mean, the ball goes into him, it probably, at least now, it ain't coming back out, most likely.
And that's one of the big things, Whitey, that they need to address on film. And I know that they are going to continue to work with Wiseman to show him exactly that, because you and I, as usual, are right on the same page. I'm watching these games and I'm saying, well, he's getting the ball, but it's just gone.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
All the movement that has defined this team for so long, and the spacing, once Wiseman is getting the ball, he's in such a hurry to make a play and to show that talent and to be the guy that everybody wants him to be, then I think he's rushing a little bit. And again, when you're watching James Wiseman, you almost have to remind yourself, he's 19. He did only play in 3 college games. He has only played in now 12 NBA games. He just does not have that kind of experience. So all of these things are normal. They're just heightened in large part because he's playing on a team with Steph Curry. And when you play with Steph, you are going to have more of the national stage. And when you play as the number 2 pick in the draft, you're going to have the expectations that come with that. So he is going to be fine over time. The question will be not only what happens tomorrow against Davis and the Lakers, and what he sees over the next few weeks as teams around the league start to game plan for him more. The real question, Whitey, is do you trust that James Wiseman has the kind of talent that can be brought through over the next year or two as Steph Curry enters into the end of his prime and beyond that? And for me, as I watch Wiseman, as much as I know that the Warriors really like him, I wonder if they're not going to have to move him to get a piece that is more immediate in their chase for one more title for Steph, Draymond, and Clay.
He's Nick Friedell. I'm Whitey Gleason on 95.7 The Game. We have, by the way, we have a final now from Kansas City. I mentioned earlier that Rex Ryan had said, well, the Chiefs, their last 7 wins have been by 6 points or fewer. Make it their last 8, because Kansas City survived having Patrick Mahomes knocked out of the game today to defeat the Browns 22-17, the final. So the Chiefs beat the Browns 22-17. So the Chiefs advance to the AFC Championship game, where they'll be taking on, of course, the Buffalo Bills next week. But as far as the Warriors go, Nick, we know that Steve Kerr had been from the day one, hey, defense, we got to be a top 10 defensive team. Really have to do defense. That's going to dictate how far we go. At this point, it looks to me like really they're making some progress defensively, but the offense in the half court is still a bigger concern and a bigger problem.
And as usual, Whitey, when Steve Kerr goes up to the Zoom podium in Denver the other night, and he's trying to say, you know, our offense didn't get going the way we needed it, but our defense is the bigger issue. You and I saw through that is the answer. I mean, you and I know, and there are plenty of other Warriors fans that understood, when you're watching this team offensively, if Steph has it going, they're in good shape, but that's not always going to be the answer, as we saw the other night in Denver. If he doesn't have it going, where is the help coming from? And so Kerr can say over and over, it's defense. It's always going to be defense. If the defense isn't there, we're not locked in, then we're not going to have success. Understood. And Steve is right in that sense, especially when you're not getting much at all, as they did the other night from Draymond. But Whitey, you and I are seeing the same thing. When we're watching these games, the offense is a problem because you're looking for help that I'm not sure is there on the roster. And we have said it over and over and over again. We'll say it all season long. The loss of Klay Thompson was just enormous. Even people who love Klay, I don't think everybody fully understands just what he means to everything this team does on both ends of the floor. But when you're trying to figure out where Steph is going to get that assistance, if Wiggins and Oubre aren't shooting it well and you're not getting consistency from the bench, and you know that Draymond teams are daring him to shoot and they don't trust that Wiseman can hit consistently, good luck. And until they figure out how to get him that help, I think that we're in for a lot more highs and lows that are coming from a team that is right where it should be at 500.
888-957-9570. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your participation today on the text line. Here's a question about James Wiseman from the 510. If Wiseman's going to be in foul trouble late and is not going to close out games, what's the harm in not playing cautious towards the end of his minutes and just fouling out if necessary? Well, Nick, correct me if I'm wrong, but he needs to learn how to play and how to avoid fouls. It's one thing, you know, it's one about, yeah, just get in there and, you know, pick up your fouls. He's got to learn how to play and be effective with fouls. So that's an important skill for him to learn going forward.
Whitey, it's crucial. And until he can do that, Steve Kerr is not going to be able to allow him on the floor. This is where we point out again, the loss of Chris really hurt this team for a variety of reasons, but specific to Wiseman's development. Because if you have Chris and you trust him to play at times and he's got six more fouls, then you're not just allowing Wiseman to kind of float on the floor and make the mistakes that he is early. You can take him out earlier. You can plug Chris in and pair him with Looney off the bench and then figure out what's going to happen. But this is why this roster is flawed, not only in the lack of shooting, but in the lack of big men that Steve Kerr can go to. Because, again, Alan Smyligich is not going to be a player of any note this year at all, and now he's hurt. And Looney, for as beloved as he is, he just does not look like he's going to be the type of player that you can rely upon because of his health issues. So at least for long stretches in a game. When you watch the Warriors, they're going to need more from Wiseman, but you can't just run him out there because he is going to foul out, and then you just don't have many options behind him.
Mm-hmm. So how about looking at options, ways you can maybe put the Warriors in position to be more effective in the half court? I think you touched on this earlier. I know you did. Damian Lee, perhaps as a starter, has been so good off the bench, and he plays so well with Steph. I mean, that's potentially an option. And going out and getting somebody with the DPE, maybe a little more size, is that an option? Or are they just so up against the luxury tax right now that they really don't have any flexibility there?
I'd be surprised if they made any moves, at least right now, Whitey. I think they want to see how the rest of everything plays out. And with the DPE, it's a possibility. But again, it's crucial for them to see what kind of team that they're going to have. Because if this team turns a corner in the next couple of weeks, which is absolutely possible, especially when you look at two back-to-back games against the Timberwolves coming up. I mean, if ever there were two games the Warriors needed to win this year, Whitey, it's those two Minnesota games because of the ramifications surrounding that number two pick. Or it could be, and you don't want it to be the number two pick. I should say the top three protected pick this year. You need to win those two games. But when you have this softer portion of the schedule after tomorrow night in the Lakers, and you're seeing the Knicks and the Spurs, and then you got a couple games against the Timberwolves coming up. If you can string together some wins, I think the Warriors would love nothing more than to spend a little more money, get another player of note in here, and see what they can do. But if you're just kind of middling around 500 and you're going up and down and you're not getting production offensively from anybody outside of Steph on a regular, consistent basis, then I think the Warriors aren't going to have any issue just kind of standing pat and playing for better days ahead.
Yeah, one of the things that was apparent to me before the season started was that for the Warriors to get as far as they wanted to get this year, Steph would have to approach some of the MVP levels that we've seen from him in the past. And we're seeing that so far. Right? That's clear. However, he is expending so much energy in games when he's scoring, in games when he's not able to score, because it's incredible how much of a burden he's facing in terms of the offense and how he's facing the brunt of the other teams defensively. One of the things I'll really be watching for closely this week, Nick, and they got four games this week, the Warriors with the time off, have they been able to figure out any strategies for dealing with the box and one, which, again, I know we talked about earlier. I get it. I understand why it's a smart strategy. There's part of me that says, this is the NBA. You can't play a box and one against – there's too many good players. So I'll be very interested to see if they have any answer for that this week. But I don't know. We had Wes Goldberg on last week, and I asked him about, hey, can Steph continue to exert this much energy? And he said, well, he's going to have to. And I guess for now that's pretty much where they are.
That is the only option in the moment. But, Whitey, this is a real issue for the Warriors, and this is one that, I'm not sure not only what other choice they have, but I'm not sure how sustainable it is in the here and now. As fantastic of a player as Steph is, and he's unbelievable, he's the best shooter I've ever seen, when you're about to be 33 and you're playing 38 minutes a game some nights, and Steve Kerr said before the season he'd like to keep him around 34 minutes, but you just see how games play out. When you're consistently playing that many minutes and you're of Steph's stature, you cannot stay physically ready to play night after night after night, because Whitey, on top of the box and ones, we're seeing how teams are defending Steph, and it's just one body after another. Mm-hmm. Bodies are flying at Steph Curry more so than he's seen in years and years. And this is what happens when you don't play with Klay Thompson and you don't play with Kevin Durant. This is the kind of looks that you get. If you're Steph, as proud as he is, and as much as he wants to still prove that he can dominate, as he did the other night against Portland with that 62, you've got to allow that your body just isn't in the same place that it used to be. And that's where I think the Warriors are going to fall into some real struggles another month or two from now, because you need to give him a break. But Whitey, if you give him a break, that's like a guaranteed loss. Because if you take Steph off this team with the way the pieces around him are playing, they cannot make up for that.
Yeah, we know the Warriors had great success going small with the lineup of death, but it's one thing to go small when you have Durant and you have Andre Iguodala. It's another when you, and bless him, he's a fine player, but when Eric Paschal is your small ball center, there's quite a drop-off there in talent. So, you know, it's so crucial for them when they're going small, especially against some of these bigger teams like Indiana and Denver, and I think the Lakers would apply, they just have to shoot a high percentage. I know in the last game, Stephen Wiseman shot well, but nobody else shot the ball particularly well. They have to shoot the ball well, and they just cannot turn the ball over. Bottom line is that, you know, the margin for error is so much smaller now. That said, 6-6, do we know how tough the West is going to be? I heard you and JD talking about this. To me, I'm still not sure. Take, for example, San Antonio, when they played this week. San Antonio, I saw them this week. They lost a game to Houston at home, but they're 7-6. So I still think a lot of that is kind of sorting itself out. The Warriors are figuring out how good they are, and I think we're still figuring out how tough the conference is. It's not as good as it was, but I'm not sure what's what in the conference yet, Nick.
Whitey, you and me both, and when you were trying to break down where the West is, I think the back half of the West, and you're right, JD was making this point yesterday, is kind of fool's gold, because you have teams that could get there and that feel like they're better than what they've shown to date, but the only team that's kind of on the outside looking in as we speak right now is a team like Denver, who is in the Western Conference Finals in the bubble and who sits at eighth currently at 6-6. I think they have a push within them to really get going. After that, you know, do you really trust San Antonio? Is Phoenix going to take that jump and stay on the path that they've been? I know I was high on Portland before the year, but they're the same flaws that they've had for years appear to still be there now. And, you know, with Dallas and Luka, anything seems to be possible because of how talented he is. But are they going to make that charge this year where you feel like they've kind of grown into that next tier of West teams? I don't know. It still feels to me like it's Lakers, Clippers. I think the Jazz are, not only are they up there in third now, but they're kind of elevating themselves to a higher place with Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. And then after that, I just don't know who I trust out of that conference right now, and that's part of the issue, is just keep yourself in striking distance, get hot for a little while, and then see where everything stacks up later.
By the way, speaking of fool's gold, and I know you and I have talked before about basketball cards, it's incredible how the values of basketball cards shooting upwards. Last time I was at Target, I saw, I'll see if they have any basketball cards. And it looked like a tornado had ripped through that section. There's nothing there. It's all gone. But I was looking through a drawer. I found some old, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years old. I found a Jaylen Brown rookie card. And I found also a Domantas Sabonis rookie card, Nick. But it turns out, speaking of fool's gold, yeah, they're worth more than they used to be. But if I had a day job, I couldn't quit it. Let me put it that way. But
you don't have all those Mahomes rookies, Whitey.
Like, is that
like
the one?
That couple.
That's right.
We talked about that couple that was collecting all those Mahomes rookie cards. Unless you have the goods, as is the case in any business, you don't have enough.
Yeah. Well, I went looking through some old cards. I found, I have a Reggie Miller rookie card and I have a Rodman rookie card. But it all depends, right? If they're not gem mint.
What a pair.
Yeah. If they're not gem mint, they're...
Got to get them graded, Whitey.
I guess so. But even that costs money, right? What if I get them graded and it turns out they're worth less than what I had to spend to get them graded? It's a conundrum, Nick. It's a conundrum. Oh, man. Nick Friedell and Whitey.
That's why
Gleason.
We make the big bucks, my friend.
I guess so. Coming up, we will look at the Warriors week ahead. And Nick mentioned Patrick Mahomes. Is he going to be able to play next week? We'll look at tonight's matchup and next week's AFC Championship game. We have the matchups. We'll look at them next on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
And then there were only five NFL teams still standing. It's Whitey Gleason, Nick Friedell on 95.7 The Game. Yeah, the Green Bay Packers having won yesterday. They, of course, await the winner of tonight's Tampa Bay-New Orleans game. And next week in the AFC Championship game, the Buffalo Bills will play the Kansas City Chiefs, who advanced this afternoon with a 22-17 win over the Browns. However, the Chiefs lost Patrick Mahomes to a concussion on this play.
Running the option. Keeps it. Oh, that is close. I think they're going to mark him a little short.
Oh, no.
That's Mac Wilson.
He's down, Jim. Uh-oh. Oh, Jim.
Uh-oh. He is absolutely dizzy.
Oh, my gosh, Joe.
Oh. See in his eyes. Mac Wilson with the hit.
I'm watching him walk on the sideline now. He's getting, it looks like, some of his senses back.
He's going back into the blue tent for the second time.
Patrick Mahomes was hit on his on a third quarter rushing attempt. And yeah, as you could hear there, he was unsteady. He was replaced by Chad Henne, who came in and took care of business, going 6 for 8 for 66 yards and an end zone interception against the Browns. Made a couple of big plays to preserve the win. So the Chiefs advanced, Nick, but Patrick Mahomes sustained a concussion. The Chiefs also lost Bashaud Breeland in the second half with a concussion. So it's hard to say what's going to happen next week, not knowing Mahomes' status. Chiefs did beat the Bills week 6, 26-17. So fingers crossed that we get to see Patrick Mahomes next week.
Whitey, if you're a Chiefs fan, of course that is crucial. But I can just tell you, having watched the Bills off and on through most of the year, I wouldn't put it past them to beat the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes.
Really?
And I know that's almost sacrilegious given how dominant he and that team have been. But I think the Bills have the talent to really actually do it this
year. Yes.
To get all the way over the hump and to get into the Super Bowl and flush all the ghosts of the four Super Bowls prior in the past, because Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs have something really special going on, and that Bills defense has been impressive throughout most of the year. So
playing what?
You hope for the best for Patrick Mahomes, of course. And if you're a Chiefs fan, you just hope that he stays in the dark room and he passes the protocols that are needed when you get that kind of concussion. But that is a game that I've been looking forward to for weeks because you knew the Chiefs would end up there. You knew the Chiefs would be in this spot. You weren't sure if the Bills could put it all together. It appears like they have now, and I hope for everybody's sake that Mahomes is healthy and Josh Allen and Mahomes put on a show because those two teams have some major, major talent. And at least for me, I think the Bills are right there in order to take as much advantage as they can.
Give me what I want!
It's a great point you make about Buffalo, especially defensively. Earlier in the year, their defense wasn't playing well. They had some injuries to some of their talented linebackers. But obviously, if you saw the game last night, Buffalo played very well defensively. And I know I mentioned this number earlier, but incredible Buffalo yesterday. You think Buffalo, well, they're playing in Buffalo. You know, they throw the ball. They do not run the ball. Yesterday, first quarter, zero rushes for the Buffalo Bills, which I believe is the first time it's ever happened in a playoff game. I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying it's bad. It's just like, what? Wow. And let's see, in the first half, they had one running play, and then they had Josh Allen scrambled once, and then he had a kneel down, which counts as a rushing play. So they'll come at you with Josh Allen. So that should be quite a matchup. Yeah, fingers crossed we get to see the Chiefs at full strength. But the Chiefs and the Bills for the AFC Championship next week. How do you feel about tonight's game? I'll just be honest. I'd call it sports hate for for Tom Brady. It's an interesting story. I think we talked earlier about how great it would be in terms of the ratings if he got into the Super Bowl against Mahomes. I have a hard time rooting for Tom Brady. How do you feel about this matchup tonight?
Let the hate flow through you.
Whitey, if you had asked me that question prior to the free agency period earlier in the year, I would have said, Whitey, I'm right there with you. But as a lifelong Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan, the idea that Tom Brady is going to lead this team into the Superdome and has a chance to deliver them to the NFC title game yet again for the first time since the Gruden era, the beginning of the Gruden era also, this is that moment. And, I think that people are so quick to dismiss somebody that they've grown to dislike over time. We've seen it with Tom Brady, like you mentioned, and we've seen it with Steph and the Warriors, frankly, because people are like, I'm sick of this guy winning. I'm sick of this guy getting all the endorsements. I'm just sick of seeing this guy win and get everything that he has earned along the way. But when you have won at that level and you have been the type of quarterback that Tom Brady has for two decades at this point, then it's not like he forgot. It's not like he's going to get shook in a big moment and see something that he hasn't seen before. I think everybody saw that in that Chicago game earlier in the year. I mean, I think he can count to four now, Whitey, and I think that after losing to the Saints twice, it's always difficult to beat a team three times in a year. And not only as a Bucs fan, but as somebody who has loved the NFL for a long time, it would surprise me to see Tom Brady at this stage of his career, after all that he's been through in this year, to fold against a really talented team like New Orleans.
Yeah, first of all, I meant no disrespect. I should have realized you were a Tampa Bay fan. So, yeah, that's tremendous.
Oh, none taken. Everybody thinks Bears, but the reality is that I grew up in Orlando, and my grandpa has had Bucs season tickets for like 30 years. I mean, he was taking me to the old Sombrero. I was watching Vinny Testaverde and Craig Erickson
yikes,
throw dimes all over the place. And by dimes, I mean lots of interceptions. But, you know, what it is. But the football team I grew to love the game from and love from my Orlando home was that Tony Dungy, Mike Allstott, John Lynch, Derek Brooks, Warren Sapp group that showed that defenses can dominate in a major, major, major way.
Do you think that in a way Gruden's team won what was really Dungy's Super Bowl? I mean, I've heard that I remember the Baltimore Orioles in 83, they won. A guy named Joe Altobelli was the manager, and people said, yeah, still Earl Weaver's team. Some people believe that it's still the previous coach or manager's team for the next year. So do you, as a Tampa Bay fan, does part of you feel like, yeah, that was really Tony Dungy's team that won that Super Bowl?
A huge part, but I would say this. You watch that Bucs team, and they just kept missing. There was something missing. They could not get over that hump in beating Philadelphia. And as much as I love Tony Dungy and respect the hell out of that guy, John Gruden was the right guy at the right time. And Whitey, when you think back to how we opened the show and we've discussed what it would take to deliver Deshaun Watson to the Bay and into the Niners and to this team right now with the other pieces that are on this roster, I would remind you, in tying this all together, the Bucs knew, as much as they respected Tony Dungy, it was just time for another voice. And I hated it at the moment, but the ownership made the decision that they wanted to go get Gruden. Now, if you recall, in order to get Gruden, it took, I believe, a couple first-round picks.
Yeah.
It took money. Yeah. And they made the move. And they made that move, and the next year they win the Super Bowl. And nobody cares what it took in the end, because they're not going to remember exactly what it took to bring him there. They're just going to remember that he was the one on that stage in San Diego holding up the Lombardi Trophy. And I say that to Niners fans who are thinking, it's a steep price that it's going to take to land Deshaun Watson. Well, guess what? If you get the package that delivers Deshaun Watson to the Niners, and he delivers on his promise to win a Super Bowl, nobody's going to care what it took to get him there. They're going to remember that he won and that he delivered a Super Bowl back to a fan base that is starved for one. So give yourself some perspective to anybody who's still, I don't know, they're wishy-washy on whether or not they want to spend what it takes to deliver Watson to this team. It takes whatever it takes. If you win a Super Bowl, that is the end game.
Yeah, sure, but they're so close, we think. We know last year they came so close, and I'm making an assumption that with health, next year they'll be right back there. You don't know that, but I could understand why people would be reluctant to, you know, give up too much to get Deshaun Watson, because Kyle just needs a quarterback who can hand off and throw short passes. Deshaun Watson's great, I know, but I can't understand why, if you feel like your team is close, you would be reluctant to part with too much, because you are so close. You don't want to overcorrect, but we'll see. I think you and I agree the 49ers probably will not have that opportunity. They may not be able to compete with the Dolphins for Deshaun Watson if it comes to that. But I agree with you. I mean, if you can get Deshaun Watson, my goodness, he'd be the most talented quarterback the 49ers have had since Steve Young, maybe?
Yeah, it would have to be. And why do you mention this earlier? And I think it's worth coming back to. The fan base and the city in this area, they believe in this team. And John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, they've earned this benefit of the doubt, as they should, when you get as close to winning a Super Bowl as they did. But can you imagine the jolt that would come if they swung on this deal and they got Deshaun Watson and you saw him in a Niners uniform for the first time? I mean, people would be going crazy. They would lose their minds, because they know that they finally have a quarterback in here who leaves no doubt, who answers every question about where a team needs to be and what a quarterback needs to do. So I can only imagine down the line, if we play out this scenario, just how much fun it would be in those initial moments to see that they made the decision to go a different direction. They made the investment that it's going to take to land a player of Watson's caliber, and they trust that he's the guy who's going to make them get to that stage that they just missed out on a year ago.
And Nick, let's put Guru's Brad on the table here. Coase made this point yesterday. One of the reasons why an acquisition of Watson would be so exciting around here is because, let's face it, we're kind of in a down cycle in Bay Area sports right now, right? And take nothing away from the A's. They did advance last year in the postseason. But the Giants are, you know, the Giants are long ways off from even thinking about contending. The Warriors right now, 6-6, there are some positive signs, but they're a long ways, of course, from the, you know, three championships in 4 years. The 49ers, this was a rough year for the 49ers after coming so close. So I think fans, in a way, psychologically, really need that boost, that reaffirmation that, yes, we've got one team that's right there. Deshaun Watson would absolutely energize all Bay Area sports fans in a way.
No question. And Whitey, when you've had the success that it's had over time with the Warriors, with the Giants, you know how great it is when you're supporting that kind of level of winning, because it's not just like a fluke. It's not just that one-off season where, oh, everything fell right and we caught some breaks and, man, we were so close. If only this had happened and that had happened. Well, I got news for you. The guy who can deliver the throw that Jimmy Garoppolo missed, that's Deshaun Watson. The guy who can open up the playbook to a level that Kyle Shanahan has never had with any quarterback that he has ever coached, that's Deshaun Watson. The guy who can make every play and put the entire team on his back the way that Jimmy has struggled with over time, that is Deshaun Watson. So all the issues that the offense has had, and specifically Jimmy Garoppolo has had, those get fixed immediately with Deshaun Watson if you were to bring him in. And I think that is the way to go. And if I'm the Niners, I am very aggressive, because you and I agree completely. When you have what the Dolphins have and the package that they could potentially put together, the Niners can't match up to that in many ways. But what they can do is add more assets and make it more appealing. And if I'm them, I'm doing it right now so I can plot out how the rest of my offseason is going to go and make it happen sooner rather than later.
Yeah, if you're going to do it, you definitely want to do it ASAP so you can get Watson as familiar with the scheme as possible. I'll just say this as a card-carrying Jimmy G apologist. You talked about the overthrow to Sanders. I just watched that play again, Nick. I think Sanders alligator-armed it. I think that throw was on the – you can't blame Jimmy G there. I think Sanders just – I didn't see him make the type of effort I need my wide receiver to make there at that level. And, yes, I
– That
I
is a man who really, truly has had a lot of Jimmy G. It can be better, and we're going to see another level of Jimmy G talk in his brain. Over
feels great, baby.
Right there.
Yeah. Yeah. 49ers obviously figuring – well, we have to be healthier, but, you know, they've had, even before they got to the Super Bowl, they had injury-plagued seasons. There's no explaining it, but fingers crossed that they can be healthier next year and get back into the thick of things. By the way, I mentioned this earlier as well. It's interesting to me that Sean McVay yesterday, after the Rams lost to Green Bay, Sean McVay was asked if Jared Goff is your quarterback, and he said, yeah, he's a quarterback right now. And I just thought that's so funny. Oh, guy playing with a bad thumb. And they don't have options, really, other than Wolford, I guess. But, you know, their wagon is pretty securely hitched to Goff. And I just thought, you know, it was an interesting choice of words there. The clear implication that, well, he's our quarterback for now, but we'll see, Nick. So the 49ers aren't the only team in the NFC West with quarterback issues.
No, they're not, Whitey. And the good news for Niners fans is, as frustrated as you may be riding the Jimmy G roller coaster of emotion, at least you don't have Jared Goff's contract attached to that roller coaster. Because that is the difference. The Rams made the financial decision to do what they did. The Niners structured Jimmy's contract in a way, as you mentioned, to at least allow it the possibility to get out of it when needed. Mm-hmm. And if you're a Niners fan, for as frustrating as this season is, at least you aren't tied to a quarterback that you're not sure you believe in anymore. With Jimmy, I mean, maybe they bring him back, maybe they don't, and maybe they get somebody else, and maybe they don't. But you're not tied to him long term the way it would appear that the Rams and all their money is.
All right, for what it's worth, tonight I'm still going to probably be rooting for the Saints because I did pick them to
I
get.
I can feel that coming, Whitey. Yeah.
But if they lose, I'll be okay with it, knowing that, and I didn't realize this before today, that Nick is a lifelong Tampa Bay fan. So if the Saints lose, I'll be happy for you that Tommy took care of business for you. So good luck there. And Nick, as we head down the home stretch here, and it's been an absolute pleasure working with you again today. Always enjoy it. Let's look at the Warriors week ahead. It starts tomorrow with the Martin Luther King Day game against the Lakers. And then the Warriors also this week, busy, busy week, as they're going to be playing the Spurs Wednesday, the Knicks on Thursday. Knicks with a big win today. And then they've got the Jazz. So what do you think we should be looking for from the Warriors? As I said earlier, one thing I'll be looking for is hopefully we'll see them with a better idea of how to attack a freaking box and what.
If you see that defense, Whitey, and they can't, that means that the 2 days of practice have gone to complete waste.
Yeah.
Steve Kerr was really excited about, in the wake of that postponement with the Suns game, he had the chance to get a young team on the floor, to get them practicing with Steph and Draymond, to get them feeling comfortable about where they needed to be. One of the things you've got to figure that they hit upon is that when teams throw out these defenses, the janky defenses, as Steph calls them,
yeah.
When they throw them out, you can't have guys kind of frozen and not sure where to go and not sure what to do. So I would hope after those extra practices that NBA teams aren't used to seeing during the year, especially a year as condensed as this one, that they would be better. But, Whitey, to me, you've got to find a way to beat the Knicks, and you have to get at least one of these games with, and it's going to be tough tomorrow against a motivated Lakers team, but you mentioned the Jazz and the Spurs. If you split those four games, you maintain on a good pace. It's when you start to hit the wall where you're losing three of four or you're losing four in a row where you go, uh-oh, things could get off track in a hurry. And when you're playing the talent that they're going to be facing at the beginning, at the end of the week, you better make sure you take care of business against the teams you need to beat when you get the chance.
If Oubre starts making a few more threes, does everything else then fall into place? I mean, to my eye, that's only part of it, as we discussed earlier. He still doesn't seem comfortable in the offense, and I'm sure those things are somewhat related. But if he starts just making a third of his threes, do you think that most of his offensive issues then kind of take care of themselves?
I would think so. I think the Warriors think so. I think they trust that once he gets his confidence up again, Whitey, that he's going to be on a much better track. But with Oubre, it's been so strange because you know that he's not this bad of a shooter, and it's very clear in watching him that the shots and the lack of the shots that he is taking, it's all in his head. But I think what would be really worrisome for me if you're in the Warriors organization is when you watch Oubre in this last week, he had those couple games where he got rolling, and he was knocking down shots, and he was blowing kisses to the opposing bench, and then he followed that up by missing a ton of open looks. And so the rhythm that they keep saying that he needs to find, it appears that he's found it, he just can't keep it. That is a real issue, and I'm not sure what the fix is for him, because he was convinced he was going to come out and have a big year, and up to this point, that has not been the case at all.
Yeah, sometimes, and I hope this isn't the case, but at times, Nick, he looks a little yipsy with that jump shot. Like, wow, he's just trying to get that thing over with. He has no feel for it, and it's such a bad situation for him now. He's just trying to get that thing out of his hand as soon as possible, and then it's another miss, and then it becomes this vicious cycle where he just continues to lose confidence. So hopefully, and Wiggins going to shut down LeBron, right? I mean, we know Maple Jordan is shutting down LeBron. Book it, Nick.
Whitey, that's a like a cousin of Jimmy G has another level to hit. And he's going to be much better than what we've seen.
The heat has made you powerful.
I'm glad I amuse you. We will leave you with that, Nick. Thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Make sure you check out Nick tomorrow. He'll be on with Steiny and Dibley, my favorite show on the station. Thank you, Nick. Thank you, Sam. Thanks, Sterling. Enjoy the rest of your holiday weekend. Fox Sports Radio is next on 95.7 The Game.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.